Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, coming up on CarCast, we are going to talk about Ford F-150 Power Boost, Porsche Taycan, maybe a little bit of Volvo stuff, and the hot new BMW M5 CS. This could be a fantastic super sedan to get into. Before we get started, a word from our friends at Dodge. You know, Dodge has officially opened the doors of the new 2021 Dodge Durango SRT Hellcat. It's the most powerful SUV ever. Exclusive for 2021, it features 710 horsepower, a new aggressive exterior styling, a new interior with a driver-centric cockpit. I saw some of the numbers on this thing, and it's like 0 to 60 in like 3.5 seconds. It is just an animal. It looks fantastic. All buyers receive a full day of pro instruction at the Bondurant High Performance School of Driving, and deliveries will begin early this year. And you know that Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com to schedule your test drive. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. Our buddy Bill Goldberg is getting ready for his championship match at Royal Rumble. So he's working hard. He will not be here today, but you're in for a treat. We've got our buddy Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com with us. How are you, Alistair?
I'm good. Thanks, Matt. Happy New Year and all that.
Happy New Year. Yeah. Aren't you glad you're not in the UK right now?
I am mighty glad. I expect if you think we have it bad in the US, UK is in full lockdown.
Just lockdowns today. Weather, although I'm in California, so I just assume we all have this weather. I got in the car the other day and it was like 50 degrees. I'm like, nope. I was on the way here with the heated steering wheel on and the heated seats on and the heat on in the car. So I'm driving the Jag F-Pace, which is a lovely F-Type, the little sports car, which is lovely. But I had to use the heated steering wheel because it was 50.
It really makes me laugh where I live, because as soon as it dips below 60, everybody kind of comes out with a big woolly bobble hats on and, you know, and total designer. Or if it rains, it's like Patagonia head to toe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with huge boots. It's like the whole technical, you know, Everest kit comes out for the moment it rains. It makes me laugh. I've been here 3 years. I can't believe I've been doing this show for 3 years now. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Well, two.
How about, three.
Yeah, I think we've been doing this show with Bill for two. So about, two. I think it's two in March. Or it's three. Actually, I feel like it's two.
I think it's three, mate. I think it's three. I've been in California 3 years, and I remember coming to do this show like 3 weeks after I arrived, something like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe it's three. Year three. Sweet. I feel like we should be making more money.
Man and boy.
Well, speaking of that, speaking about making money, here's a word from our friends at Dodge.
Shameless.
Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand to ever be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule your test drive today. All right, so we've got a bunch of stuff to go over. You've been driving a bunch of cars, and we've got some definitely got some fun stuff coming up. Any little updates on my end? We just knock them out real quick. Got into the man cave, got the floors done, posted pictures. Thanks for all the nice comments about that. It's looking pretty good. Getting ready to move some stuff in there. But before we sort of clutter it up with parts and tools and things like that, I'm going to maybe get a couple cars in there to photograph. We're thinking about, I think Adam and I can get into this later in the week, but we're still sitting on one last Lamborghini street car. It's a 67 Lamborghini 400 GT. And our buddy Bodie Stroud has been restoring it, and we're going to get that soon. But just what we've done with the collection over the years, we have decided to sell that. You know, we've got mostly just racing cars in that collection. And as you guys know, we picked up that that other Newman car. Alistair, I don't know if you've seen this, but we've got Paul Newman's Ford Escort. It's like a 74 Ford Escort, right-hand drive with a Cosworth engine. It is a badass little car. It's a lot of fun. So when we got that, and I just think we're going to, you know, because we're so focused on the racing cars right now, we've got this last Lamborghini that we're going to be selling soon, maybe bring a trailer. Not exactly sure yet, but it was a good thought was, hey, we've got this. I got this new warehouse space. The floors are done. All the walls have been painted bright white. What a nice little place maybe to photograph that car to get some pretty decent shots. You know, for bring a trailer. So
I tell you what, Matt, of all the cars, apart from the Mura, which I now you've knew, so I'd love to go in that Escort. I remember many, many years ago being taken out in a Mexico rally car with Stig Blomqvist. Mm-hmm. I think it was a borrowed car at the Race of Champions when it used to be held in Gran Canaria off Africa. And they're just magical things that I would just love to have. A company in the UK has started rebuilding 70s Escort rally cars. They're about $80,000 or something. They're a ton of money.
Yeah.
But they are such a lovely thing. The purity of the driving.
Yeah. Now, this isn't a rally car specifically. This is a road-going car. But I guess maybe Newman raced it in Europe or, you know, I got to dig into it a little bit more. But we knew about it for a long time. Our friends in Florida had the car and was racing it. And, you know, he just got a little older and with COVID knew he wasn't going to be – he's in his 80s. He knew he was getting older, so his racing was going to be limited. And then with COVID, he just had to, you know, just really kind of lock himself down and being how old he is. And he's always talked about selling the vehicle. And we said, you know what, no rush. Whenever you want, enjoy the car. Let us know, and then we'll talk about it. And it's exactly what happened. Honestly, probably like 5 or 6 years went by, and he just enjoyed the car. But it's in the book. It's in the winning book, The Racing Life, Paul Newman. It's in the documentary, I believe. So, you know, it's a cool piece to have. And, you know, of course, me being over here, being such a Ford guy, I've always been kind of pushing Adam, like, oh, you got to get a Ford. We were close to getting this other Ford Fox Body Mustang racing car, but we just weren't able to put that deal together. So we got this. Now, of course, it's right-hand drive, and it's got a Cosworth engine, so...
Are you going to care with right-hand drive, Matt?
Yeah, I haven't tried it, but might as well give it a shot. I mean, obviously, with the manual transmission, you just got to give a little thought to the shifting pattern. I couldn't imagine it quite in a racing environment where you don't really think so much about the shifting as you do everything else that's going on. But around the street, I think I could just give it some thought and do it slowly and figure it out.
Well, it's the same H pattern. It's just your left hand.
Yeah.
And the clutch is still in the same place.
Yeah, no,
it's funny. without wishing to name names, a couple of years ago, we went over to Goodwood with McLaren for the Festival of Speed. And I know that, as you do, I know the Nissan PR guy really, really well. And when we arrived there, it was like, right, we're going to get everybody 720s or 570s to drive down from McLaren's HQ in Woking down to Goodwood, which is about an hour and a half normally. And of course, like, this was full of American guests, and most hadn't driven right-hand drive. And if you think about, like, the worst car to get into would be something like a 720, where the visibility is good for a supercar, but it's still a supercar.
Yeah.
And it's wide. And the roads down to Goodwood are super narrow, very kind of, you know, old English roads. And we arrived down at the hotel, and I think there was, like, four vehicles, and I think three had been hit in some description. One of them had to go back on a trailer.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just like a couple of alloys or a wing or, yeah. So be careful.
We were down there. Chris was with us, I believe. We were down there, you know, heading out to Goodwood. And we had a crew. We were filming stuff. And, you know, Mike August and everybody. So we had a van. And you're right. Some of those some of those roads, they're not made for like a sprinter van, you know, like tall.
No.
So you're just whacking trees at the top of this thing the whole time out, getting on that long road that goes out there before you get into town again. It's just, you're just trimming trees with that thing. That's where Mike yelled at that nice little old lady.
Yeah.
She was like, "Sir, you're going the wrong way." He's like, "Shut up." He just kept going.
Yeah, he played the ugly American.
Yeah, totally well. The ugly American. I don't think we're allowed to.
Did he have the big white trainers on?
Oh, my gosh. And he was driving at the time, too. So he was hanging out the window of that thing, yelling at this little lady. She was trying to be nice. Going like, yeah. No, you're just going the wrong way. He's like, "Shut up." Keep going.
I think we had to fill in some of the paint with like a Sharpie or
something.
Oh, we
did. Yeah, with the black van, and we scratched the side. So we just went out there with a Sharpie, just fill in the black lines. And then Nate returned the van, and it was pouring rain. So they didn't have like an opportunity to go inspect it. We're like, hey, once it's out of our hands, we didn't do anything.
Never buy a hire car.
Yeah. So then we had to take off like 3 years before we can go back. All right. So we've got some interesting stuff going on. You've been doing a little driving. You mentioned Bronco Sport, which I drove as well. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that. I know we've covered it quite a bit here already, but just to get your thoughts. But also, Ford F-150 Power Boost, F-150 Hybrid, and Porsche Taycan. Let's get into some of that. Where do you want to start?
I mean, I had the
start with one F-150.
Why not start with the biggest? Yeah, this was a vehicle that we gave our Edmunds Top Rated Truck Award to at the end of last year, and I finally got to spend some longer time in it over last weekend and a few days besides. And yeah, it's a lovely thing. It's crazy when you think how far trucks have come on. I mean, this was a platinum, so it's the second to top trim. Limited's the top trim, but it had all the hybrid system and loads of additional equipment. And it's just it's a beautiful thing. I mean, you have the beds that lie flat. You know, you've got these new, you can opt for these seats that actually basically turn into like a business class bed, mm-hmm. but you've actually got more room than you have in most business class seats. You have the little tables that fold out in the middle. So you have to push your button and the gear stick goes down, and then you can fold out these tables. You know, the quality of the leather, just the fixture. I mean, it feels inside like a luxury car with tons and tons of space and glass roof, and it goes on and on. Massage seats, massage seats in F-150. It's heated steering wheel mat just to please you. But it's a 74. This was a $74,000 truck. And it's strange when you think the range starts at 30 grand and goes to, well, almost 100. You know, it's almost kind of mad to think of it as an F-150. You've got to almost kind of compartmentalize it. But a great thing. I mean, it drives well. The hybrid system, it's kind of nice to have it around town, but it's not perfect. You do feel, as you do with so many hybrids, that little bit of kind of transmission powertrain unrefinement as it cuts from engine to motor and back again, and when it's almost running in generator mode, it doesn't sound too great either. But it's kind of nice to have at low speeds, particularly if you're kind of more, you know, if you're more urban centric like I am. The only thing that really makes it feel like a truck is just the sheer physicality of the thing, and B, the ride quality. You know, that's the bit where you realize you're in a truck and not an SUV, just because you still have that kind of fairly chunky ride.
Right. It still has to tow and carry a payload, which is actually interesting because I did, when I drove it at the Ford event, I did grab one of the big trailers. I grabbed one of the large, like, Streamliner or what do you call it? I caught one of the big trailers and towed with it. And Power Boost towing was interesting because, you know, first of all, it loads up that suspension, which is actually more comfortable with a bunch of weight on it than it is without, oftentimes. And the combination of the electric motors getting onto the freeway up to speed or from a get-go, I kind of saw it as a bit of an advantage having that low-end torque.
Yeah, and it's all instantaneous just to get things moving, isn't it? So, yeah, it's a cool thing. And the only thing is, when you start, you know, in isolation, And then you start thinking, if you don't need a truck, suddenly if it's 75 grand, you know, you're into like GLE, X5. I know Adam's just bought a Lincoln Navigator. You know, $75,000 buys you a pretty serious SUV.
Yeah, it does. I just don't know how much, I don't know, you guys can answer that, but how much cross-shopping there is. I feel like if you're a truck guy or you need a truck or have, you know, driven trucks for a long time, like you're just kind of that, right? You know, you just,
yeah,
you're kind of in on them, right? And that's what Ford's banking on, right? That's why they sell almost a million of these things a year.
it is. And you know what? I mean, obviously I got, no, talking about English roads, you know, you couldn't drive an F-150 in the UK, but I'm a truck guy now. I absolutely love these things. And we went out with my
Yeah, you're
wife
a truck
and,
guy. Welcome
I'm
to the club.
I'm a truck guy now. We went out on Sunday and we went to do a hike, and then we called and got some food on the way back. And we actually, the three of us sat in the bed. So it was like COVID-friendly family environment. You can't sit outside and eat, but you can sit in your bed. It was great.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
You know, I drove a number of them, like you were just driving now, and we're saying that, you know, these are $75,000 trucks at this point, but they don't have to be, right? You said they start at about 30. I don't even know if it's even less than that. But do we know where the Power Boost version starts? What is basically, if it really is a utility vehicle for you, the idea of the Power Boost is fantastic. All the plugs and the outlets and the power on board and the job site stuff. So it kind of makes you wonder, like, what is the Power Boost entry level price? Because I don't know that the Power Boost, it's not like the Power Boost is $10,000. It's a few thousand dollars above. So I don't know. Is it somewhere around 33 grand to get sort of an entry level Power Boost F-150?
Yeah, it's 2.5. If I remember correctly, it's about 2.5 grand as an option. Or it's 2.5 grand above the V8 as an option. But what I think what Ford's done, you know, there's so much complexity in ordering a truck these days. If you ever see the order guide for an F-150, it's insane. It's like one of those old-fashioned telephone books.
Yeah.
But what they have done is they've allowed this powertrain on pretty much the whole range. I can't remember if it's on the very bottom trim, but instead of just reserving it for Platinum and Limited, they're actually giving you access to it across the range, so you can spec the truck exactly how you want it. So yeah, I think it starts in the I think it probably starts in the 30s, or at the very least the 40s. You don't have to get all the bells and whistles to get the powertrain, which is great, because actually depending on your needs, that hybrid powertrain could be super useful.
Yeah. I think you're right in that. I don't remember if Power Boost meant you'd have to get a bunch of other stuff. You know, like a lot of times you're like, oh, I want this package, but you have to, you know, get three other packages default. And I don't think you have to.
I think you might have to get towing and things like that, but there's a bit of stuff. But yeah, and I think then the generator system in the load bay is additional, but it's at least they're giving you the option. You don't have to have, you know, heated seats and a heated steering wheel in order to get that transmission.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that being said, talking about electrification and whatnot, you also got into the Porsche Taycan. Now, we talked about this. Bill and I talked about this last week, saying, hey, this is the entry-level Porsche. They went from Turbo S to Turbo to 4S, and now with a reasonable price discount of I don't know, 20 grand or so, now into the 80-something thousand dollar range, you can get a rear-wheel drive Porsche Taycan. You got an opportunity to drive it?
Yeah, I did. And I have to be, we're all under a sort of legal embargo not to talk about too much about driving till early February. So if I sound a bit, so I'm going to have to honor that to a certain extent. But it's, yeah, I mean, basically what it is a Taycan 4S without the front motor. So kind of what Tesla do with the Model 3, where you have the standard range plus, which is just rear wheel drive and a single motor at the back. So it starts a smidgen under 80 grand. So I reckon mid 90s is probably what you'll spend. You know, it's a Porsche. You always have to put on a few bits and pieces. So it's, you're probably going to, you could get one that you would want in a trim that you'd want for about 90,000, which is a lot less. And really what you're giving away is straight line performance. It's, It's a bit like, you know, the entry level versions of the Cayenne and the Macan. They're just not in a straight line. They're just not that fast. I mean, this thing's got 327 horsepower, you know, and it's a pretty hefty car, the Taycan. So it all depends on what you think a Porsche should be. If you need a Porsche to go fast in a straight line, then, you know, people are going to kind of bemoan it's not a real car. But if you think about a Porsche as a more kind of holistic blend of virtues, then it probably makes sense. And it, as a road car, I was talking to some of the guys at Porsche about it and where they see the market. And a lot of people might be buying this, you know, wealthy people as their everyday car, and then having, you know, a 911 or something else as a toy at the weekend. So you have your GT3 in the garage for when you really want to drive, and then your Taycan is your commuter car. But, you know, we are talking about nearly 300 grand with the Porsche there, but that seems to be how some customers are treating it.
You know, for this base level version, without getting too much into the driving impressions, you know, eliminating the front motors, obviously eliminating some weight as well and some performance out of it. But overall, I mean, do you think it's going to be the one that gets people into this car more? And is the range any better or worse in this configuration? Are they just going smaller battery as well, and the range is what it is?
No, the battery is exactly the same lineup as the 4S. So you can have the normal battery, or you can have a performance battery, which is another $5,000 and gives you a bit more range. Interesting, we now, Edmunds always does a dedicated EV loop, and our results for Taycan are extraordinary. They're claiming just over 200 miles. We were getting over 300. And with Teslas, we don't tend to match their range. With Porsche, we were getting like 50% more. So, you know, the Taycan is always really impressed with how far it goes in the real world. So, yeah, you're losing about 200 or 300 pounds off the front by ditching the front motor. You're keeping the same battery, and also there'll be some efficiency gains. So, actually, we would expect the range to be better than a 4S. The other thing to think about, I put this to Porsche, is all you've really done is take away the front motor and air suspension, which is a $2,000 option anyway, and you're saving $25,000. So the numbers don't seem to add up. Surely you're not saying a front motor is $25,000. So
there's got to be a bunch of other options, like floor mats and a steering wheel and a brake pedal.
Yeah, which
because
that was my cynicism. I said, like, right, okay, what else is gone?
Yeah, you know, because Porsche is very a la carte, right? Porsche has more options than probably more options than an F-150.
Probably, yes. It's certainly more expensive options.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, a 4S is 100. You think about it this way: a 4S is 120 grand with in the real world. And a Taycan is 95. So it's still, by the time you put the bits on it, it's still 20 grand cheaper. So it's all about how fast you want to go in a straight line. Unless you live in the snow belt, and in which case all wheel drive is probably going to be pretty useful.
Right. Okay. Do we know how well these are selling overall? I mean, it seemed like it was a hot item when Porsche was coming out with it, and I mentioned this on previous shows, but a few people have sent me photos going, hey, just drove by the Porsche dealer and there's seven of these out front. You know, so I'm curious, maybe it's just a geographic thing, but is Porsche selling these?
Yeah, in a word, yes. If you look at the sales figures for last year, Taycan really propped them up. So it vastly outsells Panamera. I think it's kind of not far off 911. So, I mean, Macan and Cayenne are still the biggest selling vehicles for Porsche, but Taycan's doing really well for them. Way ahead of Panamera, ahead of 718, you know, the Boxster and Cayman. So it's really helped them their sales overall were still a little bit down last year, as you'd expect, but it's really helped boost their numbers. And, you know, I can't see that going away. It's a desirable thing. I think it's sensibly priced. You know, you forget the Turbo S at 200, you know, a 4S is everything you'd need, and it's the same price as a 911 Carrera.
You know, with how well SUVs do in this country and how well SUVs are doing for Porsche, why was the Taycan a sedan? Why wasn't it, you know, some sort of slightly lifted crossover-ish type of vehicle? Maybe closer to, I don't know, I-Pace, Jaguar I-Pace, right? As opposed to sedan. Like, why isn't it, I don't know, 4 inches taller?
Well, funny you should say that. Have you seen the Taycan Cross Turismo?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, a little bit.
But they're going to build it, which is basically exactly what you just described. So it's it'll go on sale this year, or at least it'll be launched this year. And basically what that will be is a sort of jacked up Taycan with a extended rear quarters. So more like a sort of a genuine crossover. So sort of somewhere between the Taycan as we know it and a proper SUV. So like a wagon, it's a bit like an Audi Allroad. So it's going to have better ground clearance.
Panamera has the hatchbacky version. They have the bubble back one. What is it? The Sport? Is it the Sport?
Is that the Sport Turismo?
Yeah, maybe the Sport Turismo. So it's an electric jacked up version of that.
Yeah. So that's going to be a lot more practical. It's going to be a bit more off-roady. I think that's going to be a really cool thing. I guess the challenge for them on the EV side is, you know, if it's compromising efficiency and everything else. And I think also the Mission E, when they came out with that concept, everybody loved it. And the Taycan's just such a beautiful looking car. Quite color dependent. The car I had was like an ice white and looked amazing. I had a red one, and it kind of lost a bit. But yeah, that Cross Turismo is going to come out this year and kind of answer that question, really. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be, I think that's going to be the one to have, to be honest. And it's probably going to be about 10% more expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I think that's going to be the one that where the volume is going to come from, I think, even more so than what they're doing right now, which is interesting because you're talking about a vehicle that's coming out this year and there's going to be some debuts and stuff for it. Are we done with car shows? Are we done with, you know, with LA and New York and Chicago and Detroit? And
well, Detroit just got canceled. New York is just, you know, traditionally April. That's not going to happen. LA is November. I mean, let's hope that you and I can enjoy a beer in person by November, Matt.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. It's a conversation. And auto shows are already having difficulties in this kind of digital age where everything's released online. Will they come back? I kind of hope so. You know, I miss that. Maybe it's more of a media thing, but I miss that idea. As a consumer too, I miss the idea that you go to one place and everything's there, and the glamour and the lights and the fact that you're seeing the very latest things, and, you know, anybody who's anybody in the automotive world is there, and it's a great social occasion, and you get a real sense of where the industry at, who's up, who's down, you know. So I hope it doesn't go away completely. You know, I used to go to Geneva, Paris, or Frankfurt, Chicago, Detroit, and yeah, it's a big part of the year. And SEMA, of course, you know, on the tuning side. So, you know, CES. I don't know, Matt. I really don't know, because they're so expensive to do.
Well, that was the thing, is they're very pricey to do. So they were already kind of hurting, you know, and more manufacturers were dropping out of those big events because it's so expensive for them to go there, right? Like, you know, to somebody have a booth there, it's very expensive. We've seen for a long time LA Auto Show. I can't remember the last time, you know, some of the – well, maybe recently Ferrari was there, but I don't know that they did that. I think they were off for a few years. But you start to think about, you know, with COVID, we didn't have auto shows for the last year or so. But I wonder if they're going to be gone forever. So that's going to be kind of the thing. And I'm kind of wondering if something needs to change under the entire model of how it's structured. I mean, they're never really, you know, like you said, they're very expensive. And a lot of that cost came down to the manufacturers having to foot the bill for huge expensive booths. But maybe there's got to be a way to offset some of that stuff so it becomes more attractive for the manufacturers to attend again. And then how do we get consumers there and maybe, you know, make a little money off of consumers in some way? Like, maybe the idea of these auto shows start to implement more of a sales thing happening, like on site, pre-orders, deposits, cars you want to buy, you know, like obviously you're not going to take it home that instant, but you know, how do they start to monetize? It's just some thought into, you know, because you mentioned SEMA, and SEMA is a trade show, right? And there's a lot of business that goes on behind the scenes. It's not really a consumer-oriented thing. The media, it's a huge media event, but it is a buying and selling, you know, trade event. It's like, hey, here's all the new parts that are coming out this year. I'm going to meet with all of my retailers, and the retailers are going to say, this is what we like. We're going to get excited about this new, you know, EFI system, these new supercharger packages, and, you know, things like that. But there's no real commerce going on there other than, you know, lining up sales for the year. So I kind of wonder what's going to happen with the auto shows to make it, you know, financially viable.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to drop 20, 30 million bucks on a stand, think how much, you know, think how much Instagram advertising that is.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's as, sometimes it's as simple as that.
Also, the car companies have been having a lot of success debuting certain vehicles at various events, things like Goodwood we talked about, and Monterey Car Week, and, you know, it could be anything. Just like, you know, Long Beach Grand Prix is a huge event that we have here. I mean, why not start taking advantage of those? There's so many consumers coming. There's so much attendance.
Yeah, and the other thing on auto shows historically is, you know, you just get lost in the noise. So unless you can pull off something like Ford did with the GT, where they steal the show. But if you think about the year where Ford pulled off that extraordinary coup where nobody knew about the GT, then suddenly rolled this thing out. If you'd spent any money launching any other car at that show, you were toast, because everybody only talked about the GT. So the idea of launching something at a different time or a different show or a different event means at least you can kind of grab all the limelight. Otherwise, you're just like, you know, 2% of the overall event. You talk about auto shows. I think things like, you know, Car Week and things like that isn't going to go away. So maybe they will grow for this sort of thing. And, you know, because that's a social, that's just part of the social calendar. It's not it's a different sort of event, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've just got the mega rich though.
And you know, it's like the auto shows are so compact, and it's just all about press releases being rolled out and news just being shoved down your throat. Like, you know, for what you guys do as content creators on about new cars, it's like an auto show comes around and you have to cover every car that's out there. But then which ones do you lean into more that you think are a little more special that, you know, might even generate more viewers to your site? But nobody really gets a fair share. Honestly, though, sometimes the underdog sweeps it. You know, it was years ago at LA Auto Show, Rivian had a little booth and it got a lot of attention, right?
Yeah, I mean, Rivian's just had another big funding round. And actually, where I live in South Bay in LA, they about four of them prototypes drove past me last weekend. And I was just a bit slow with the old iPhone. So I've got a shot as one just kind of leaves the frame. But yeah, I mean, they of all the breakthrough brands, I mean, Fisker's actually just moved in a couple of miles from where I live. And it's of all those kind of breakthrough brands now, Rivian looked like the strongest bet, at least in the US. You know, sadly, Byton seems to have gone down, and, you know, still waiting for more news on that. But Fisker seems to be doing okay, but that's probably a year a bit away. But I'm really excited by the Rivian. I think that's going to be, you know, there's proper money behind it, you know, proper engineering know-how. I think that could be a good thing.
And I would say they have the right partnerships as well. I think that was an important thing. Not everybody, but basically what I'm saying is there are so many like sort of startup car companies and startup EV companies because they all want a piece of this Tesla pie. And what I mean by that is I don't mean selling of the cars. I mean this massive market capitalization they have, their public stock. You know, Elon Musk just shot up to be the richest person on the planet, passing Jeff Bezos. And it's all in the Tesla stock. And now investors and executives, like everybody wants a piece of that. You know, of course, we know the car companies that have been around for 100 years, they're staring at that stock price too, going, hey, we want a piece of that. You know, you know, the Fords and GMs and BMWs, and they all want a piece of that. And actually, to your point, is Ford invested in Rivian to literally try to get a piece of that?
Yeah, and to help them with the F-150 EV as well. And actually, Ford's share price and GM's has actually responded a little bit, partly because they're getting heavily into the EV stuff. And we were surprised. We gave the, as you know, we gave the Mach-E our, you know, award at the end of last year, and we got a lot of pickup from that. You know, Ford were excited about it, but also broadly across the industry, and Wall Street picked it up. And you know, I think that car, it's not going to sell in huge numbers, but that car is a real shot in the arm to Ford. And the fact that it's been really well received is really important for them. So, you know, the old world needs to be able to, you know, to show that it can play in this space. Mercedes is going big on things like the EQS, and there's some really cool screen tech. I don't know if you've seen the release, like the screen technology and everything else. There's some really cool stuff coming. And, you know, Tesla's not going to have it all its own way.
You know, and
I was just going to say about the Taycan, the only thing is that Tesla has in its advantage at the moment is just the infrastructure. I tried to charge the Taycan and I ended up at a Honda dealership somewhere near Lancaster on my way to Willow Springs. And it was like 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm at a Honda dealership in the middle of nowhere trying to charge this thing. And with a Tesla, you know, you go to a supercharger, you plug it in and it talks to the car and all is well.
Yeah.
You know, and the infrastructure for anything that isn't a Tesla at the moment isn't good enough. And, you know, I think it's taking time for people like Porsche to get their head around the fact that it's not just about selling a product. They've got to sell the whole package. And, you know, on the rest of the EV, it's just not good enough. And they need to sort it out fast. The other irony is, sorry, I'm going on, but the other irony is, if Volkswagen's Dieselgate hadn't happened, where would the infrastructure be? Because it's Dieselgate money that's basically been pumped into Electrify America to provide all these charging points. Just imagine where we would be if that hadn't happened. Actually, you know, who knows? You know, Tesla might have pretty much had the market to themselves.
Yeah,
because right now it would put me off buying a Taycan simply because the infrastructure is rubbish.
Right, and I know everybody's sort of banking on all the car companies are banking on. Hey, you charge this at home. This is a commuter car. This isn't a road travel car. This isn't, you know, hey, you drive it around town in LA all you want, but you know, you're going to go to Vegas, you know, rent yourself an SUV and go there or fly, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what they go on. But it's funny because they keep telling us that story, not because that's the real story. They keep telling us that story because there's no infrastructure, right? And how do they alleviate that worry? Is they go, they just say, oh, don't worry, you plug it in at home. And like, it's fine because there's no other answer to it, you know?
Well, I set off from LA. It was 90% charged. I drove out into Willow Springs, which is about 90 miles away, and got there. The first charger I tried to go to was literally didn't exist. It was in the navigation, didn't exist. Second was a Honda dealership. So I literally spent 2 hours that day parked at a Honda dealership in the middle of nowhere trying to charge this thing. And all the other option was to drive all the way to Mojave, which is another 30 miles, to try and find a supercharger.
Yeah.
And then it's not good. It's not good. Rant over.
Yeah. All right. No. Well, on a similar topic, I drove the Volvo. We got into the Volvo a little bit last week, but you drove it as well. Similar one. I drove the XC60 Recharge, which is a plug-in hybrid. And you drove an XC40?
Yeah, well, we had one in the office. I didn't get into myself, unfortunately, but I know we had in the office the XC40 full EV. And actually, we're pretty impressed by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I drove the XC60 Recharge, and, you know, it's only about 19 miles on that battery. You know, fairly, you know, as you would expect, fairly seamless, you know, integration between the two. It was significantly faster with a little bit of charge in the battery because when you're, you know, it's 400 horsepower with both the engine and the motor, you know, the gas engine and the electric motor. You know, it's 400 horsepower, and it seemed quick. It seemed to scoot around pretty good. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, though. It's a front-wheel drive gas engine vehicle with a rear electric motor because it felt like it was front-wheel drive when it was just in the gas engine mode. And I didn't dig into the specs. I just kind of wanted to like drive it and see what it felt like. But it was a little interesting to me. Now, it's that 2-liter compound boost. It's the turbocharged, supercharged 2-liter engine. And I don't know. Do you think it's front wheel drive?
One electric motor in the back? Isn't it front wheel drive and all wheel drive on demand? So it's basically front wheel drive for efficiency, but then we'll send power to the rear if you need it.
Yes, and I think
since I drove one of those.
And I think it's one electric motor, and I think it's in the rear. So however it contributes to it. But the default mode is front wheel drive, not rear wheel drive. It's, you know, because we talk a lot about EVs being, it's a rear wheel drive gas engine. You got electric motors on the front wheels or something like that. But this is not a NSX. This is something different.
Yeah, when they first came out, the whole interaction of the hybrid system wasn't great, but they did improve it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's
getting there. You know, the one thing I wanted to point out on the Volvo is it's lovely. It's a sharp design. The interior is nice.
Yeah.
You know, and I get this, you know, this one I was driving, this Recharge, it's the plug-in hybrid system. It's got all the nice features and, you know, the heated seats and all that stuff. And it starts getting up to that $70,000 range for the XC60, which is sort of the middle of their lineup of SUVs. You know, but it's a pretty vehicle. It's actually really nice.
It is. It's a few years old now, but it also has, like, the best seats in the business. I like the cabin. I think it's a... Yeah, or even the non-hybrid, which is a lot cheaper, just like a standard XC60, you probably get a good deal on one these days. That's they're a nice thing. Even the XC90 is old now, but that's also, you know, super comfortable. And I think we've talked about this before, Matt. What I like is Volvo isn't trying to be, you know, they're not trying for Nürburgring times. They just say we're going to build a really comfortable, stylish family SUV, and then you get into them and bumble around town and think, actually, this is just a nice place to be.
Yeah, and now Volvo's strategy at this point is not to have a combustion engine only. Everything will be EV or hybrid, right? I think they're going to do away with just the straight up gas engine.
Yeah, in Duke. Yeah, and basically because they're obviously part of a much bigger group now of Geely, so they will have Polestar as their sort of sportier EV brand. Then Volvo will be your sensible family brand and focus on safety and comfort. And then, of course, Lotus is part of that family as well. And Lotus will be this, you know, ultra sporty EV brand as well. And interestingly, Lotus just came out this week and said that they're stopping production of the Exige and the Elise and everything else. And yeah, I got a bit wistful. The Elise was the first kind of like, you know, genuine sports car, extreme sports car I ever drove. I joined Autocar as a road tester at age 21, and we had an Elise on our long-term test fleet back then. That was in 98. That was amazing. It never came here. The first generation Lotus Elise was just fabulous. It didn't meet any of the federal requirements, and you could maybe get one in the 25-year rule now, but not into California. But yeah, what a fabulous little car that was.
Okay, you say fabulous, but what you mean is on the track in a raw form.
No, actually, I don't, because it had, I don't.
Because I was behind a few of these cars, and the parts are just falling off of it as I'm behind it, like plastic bits are firing off the back of this thing. And it's like I like driving it, but I just drove like the most recent, I think, Evora, and, you know, it's a cool car to drive around. It's small and it's nimble and it's quick, but it's a pain in the ass to get in and out of, and it's real tight, and it feels like it's got an aftermarket like Alpine stereo, and it's just like, you know, it just feels
like
a little
it has.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it is. No, I mean, the original Elise, and this comes back to what we always talk about, like horsepower. The original Elise had 118 horsepower, and it didn't weigh very much. There was no airbags. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was super lightweight, super basic, like a Caterham 7 or what was the original Lotus 7 for the modern era. And they built this thing believing that basically racing drivers would buy it, you know, that people would buy it as a fun thing, but real enthusiasts. And it was so successful, a bunch of city boys from London went out and bought them. And then the thing was so knife-edged. The lift-off oversteer was like nothing you've ever felt before. And people kept crashing them. So when they came out with the second generation car, the one that she did come to the US, that was a lot tamer. That was a lot more kind of engineered for understeer and all the rest of it. But that first generation car was just I remember taking my girlfriend at the time, again, it's going back 20 years. My girlfriend at the time, I remember going out in it in the freezing cold. And basically, she ended up with hemorrhoids. It's just really, they had these terrible seats.
Yeah.
So the roof off, freezing cold, really like, they built these seats where you had like a big ridge across your backside. So after a few miles, it was agony. And yeah, she ended up in hospital. That was really, that was not a good moment. We're not still together, really.
You tell your wife now, hey, you better settle down or I'll make you drive in the first jet at least.
Yeah, you don't know how good you've got it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. We just spent a weekend in the F-150 Power Boost. You better count your blessings.
if I could bring the Series 1 Elise over and into California, I would love that thing. I just thought it was a fabulous, fabulous car.
So what's going to be the next Lotus? The announcement was more about we're stopping these vehicles, you know, the current lineup, but did they get into much of what the replacement is going to be?
No, they've got the Avisia. I'm quite sure I pronounce it, which is this like crazy hypercar, but that's just a image thing. I mean, what they will be coming out with, I think, in due course is a kind of 911 type money car, that like 100 to 120K. That's probably where they see their market is. And they're not going to be going for Porsche volume, but they are going to be, I think it's that sort of price range. So it's not going to be Ferrari, Aston Martin. It's going to be where Lotus always was, really, with the Esprit. It's going to be somewhere, it's going to be sort of Porsche level. I think that's how they're going to pitch it.
To sell it here, that's kind of where you need to be, right? If you go too raw, too lightweight, too race car-ish, then you're just going to end up with what they've had, which is not a lot of sales, or Alfa Romeo 4C, right? Like little.
Yeah, 4C is a terrible car.
Yeah, just like a little, a little too much work to drive, you know. And that car beats you up. I mean, you drive that thing just down the freeway here, down the 405. That car just.
Well, the 4C was supposed to be inspired by the Lotus Elise, but they just made a bit of a hash of it. But yeah,
it needs to be more of a comfortable vehicle. It could still be lightweight. It could still be fast. It could still have, you know, a lot of that Lotus DNA. But it just needs like a little bit more livability, a little bit easier to get in and out of, a little bit better visibility out of the vehicle, just a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, and they've always had that problem where, you know, sometimes we would look at it and go, oh, shit, a bit like Aston, you know, should I buy this? Should I buy that? And then they go, but you go buy a Porsche. Because you, at the end of the day, if you just want something that works and, you know, he's going to give you... Evora was a fabulous car, but, you know, and in many ways, if you're just going to drive it on, you know, Angeles Crest or something like that, then you'd take the Evora over a Cayman. But then which one were you actually going to buy? And that's kind of why they didn't sell.
Yeah.
For all the reasons that you've outlined, that visibility, and it's got this, and it's still just got a Toyota engine in the back, and... But there's so much equity in the Lotus brand. If you're a proper enthusiast and you know the history of Lotus and Jim Clark and all that sort of stuff, there's still so much equity in it. Arguably more than Aston Martin. And I still want, you know, every time I watch Pretty Woman or Basic Instinct or something, I still want an Esprit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what bringing trailers for.
Exactly. But then you look at it and think, oh, Esprit, like 30 grand, 40 grand. And you just think, this is just going to be a world of pain.
It's going to be a world of pain. It really is. Not just the driving. I'm just talking about keeping that thing running, keeping that thing going.
Yeah, that's it. You buy a classic 911, as I have, and there's a million, you know, there's a million people around you that can look after it. You buy a Lotus and you've really got to find somebody good that's going to be, you know, that's kind of going to grandfather that car for you.
Right. And because you're only going to find one guy, it's really about name your own price, right? That guy gets to name his own price when he goes to fix it. So, you know, what are you really in for? It's interesting because we had, I think on Twitter, we had a similar conversation, you know, McLaren MP4 12C, you know, pretty car, fun car to drive, not an inexpensive car to own.
No, and that was the car that McLaren, they launched it too early. And they, by their own admission, they didn't really understand the market. Now, they thought if we just build the fastest thing, everybody will love it, and didn't realize necessarily, which they've come to realize, that, you know, all the visceral stuff is really important. It already looked a bit old. It already, you know, the engine didn't sound great, and it, you know, it'd been designed years before. But yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, they're, what are they, 70,000, what was it you sell for, 60,000-70,000 or something?
It's, yeah, somewhere
it's a
there.
Lot of car for money, but carbon tub and, yeah. You would just, every time you hear like a crunch as you go down a road, you're just going to be panicking.
Yeah, a friend of mine years ago, he was making some changes, buying a house and stuff, and he had a handful of cars, and he's like, hey, help me sell some of these cars. And I said, sure. And he had the McLaren, and he's like, I just love the idea of having a McLaren. I just have never had one, and I wanted to get into one. It was fairly affordable. And I was like, well, now he's like, I never drive it. It's too much of a pain in the ass. Like it's like just taking it in for just whatever it needs is just ridiculously expensive. He goes, that car was just not worth it. And he's got some pretty high maintenance cars. And he was like, that one just wasn't worth it. It just kind of a big letdown for him. So, and I'm a huge fan of McLaren. I love what they're doing now, but it just seemed like that car, you're right, maybe was a little rushed.
Yeah. But there is McLaren's residuals. I'm like you. I really like the company, and I think it's pretty ballsy what they've done. But the residual values on the cars is not great. Really isn't. They haven't quite made it into that kind of Ferrari stratosphere where, you know, it just doesn't quite still have the brand cachet.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of hot cars, tell me about the BMW M5. You got a little glimpse of the M5 CS.
Yeah, but BMW came out yesterday with a. You know, BMW has so much stick for its design stuff recently, but the good thing is about the M5, it's designed long enough ago that it doesn't have a ridiculous grille and all the rest of it. So
yeah,
they came out. You know, they had the M2 CS and others like that. This is the first time they've actually applied it to the M5. So what they've basically done is added 10 horsepower but taken off a ton of weight. So loads of carbon, loads of even inside you get a 4 sort of bucket seats, taken out the rear bench, that sort of thing. So the reality is 627 horsepower, 0 to 60, they're saying 2.9 seconds. It's going to be like over 140 grand, and they're only going to make it in the 22 model year. So it's about 30 grand more than a normal M5 competition, but it looks very, very cool.
I'm seeing about 230 pounds less as well, right? It's got a little bit of a diet.
So is that like a Goldberg less?
No,
Goldberg's more than that, right?
Yeah, he's wrestling, so he'd probably put on about 20 extra pounds before he's wrestling. He's probably, well, he was 100 pounds more than I was, so he was 250. He's probably 270. Yeah, it's half a Goldberg.
It's half a Goldberg.
Yeah.
But it looks...
Yeah, it's about a Goldberg.
Seen the pictures online. It looks very cool. And this might be a car that actually is a decent investment because they're only going to build it for 1 year, and you know M5s have a certain cachet still. It's a cool thing. It got me excited anyway. They artificially limited it to 190 miles an hour, which made me laugh.
So the hood, the front splitter, the mirror housings, the rear diffuser, and the rear splitter, basically. All going to be carbon fiber, and then there are carbon fiber front seats
and rear seats. Yeah,
and two rear seats. It's instead of like the normal like bench seat in the back, it's got kind of little carbon fiber buckets in the back, I guess.
That's always where people. I remember Bentley saying when they did the GT3 version of the old Continental, like the amount of weight you can save just in ripping out those like huge, you know, those big sort of sofas that you normally sit in.
Yeah.
The only thing I think is a bit naff is they've got like a little map of the Nürburgring in the head restraints, just on the top of the seat. Hey, that kind of feels like the sort of thing you do as an aftermarket. I don't know. That's a bit not to belittle the aftermarket, but you know what I mean when you have like a $6,000 car, you touch the ring and you put the sticker on the trunk. But I think that's a bit naff. The rest of it though, that would be as a family man, that would be my choice.
Yeah, well, also the 20% reduction in sound deadening material, your baby's going to love that.
Yeah, it should be fine. Less so the commander-in-chief.
You make a ride around in the Porsche, though, right? The old Porsche. So,
I'm still actually, this is a good call out, Matt, because if anybody knows of a child forward-facing Chelsea, because he's now big enough to go to forward-facing Chelsea, that will fit the rear of a classic 911, in this case a 993, I would love to hear it. Because child seats these days are so big. So what I want is a safe child seat that's a little bit slimmer. that will fit in the back. I don't think Porsche make one, but they should do.
Yeah, they should for that car, right? You need like a 45-year-old child seat.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, probably not the safest thing in the world.
Like something made out of balsa wood or...
Yeah, it should be fine. It should be fine.
Yeah. Just get her a helmet or a puffer jacket. It'd be fine. It's basically like an airbag for a baby. All right. So let me guys tell you about our friends at Geico. You know, you heard us talk about it before. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of hard work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, so we're kind of running out of time here, but I'm trying to think if there's anything. We probably had a few other things that we were missing. You guys ordered a Bronco. I wanted to touch on that.
We ordered a Bronco. Matt, there was one other thing, actually, I just thought off the top of my head that I was going to put out a bit of an appeal for. We're actually looking at expanding our hosting talent on Edmunds. We're probably going to throw it out to people out there. And what we're looking for is showreels or just people kind of contacting us. You know, we're obviously based in LA, so geography is important. It would need to be somebody who could, you know, could be local to us. But we're thinking about, you know, who else is out there. We'd love to bring a bit more kind of diverse talent to the team as well. So if anybody's listening to this and fancies, you know, contacting us, just maybe drop me a note through Instagram would work. I'm just Weaver on Cars, as you know, on Instagram. But yeah, we're gonna publicize it a little bit more, but we are starting to think about who's out there and who might be great to host some of our content.
That sounds fantastic. You guys want to work for Alistair? Hit him up on Instagram.
Well, that's the downside,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Actually, I think Chris just submitted his resume as you spoke. He's like, I'm out of here.
Check your email.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris just slid into your DMs right now. All right, guys. Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, so Bronco. You ordered a Bronco.
We ordered a Bronco, yeah.
And I just met with Ford Performance Parts. I just met with their group through a SEMA conference. And you should expect a bunch of performance parts heading your way for the Bronco as well. Now, these aren't just the dealer accessories, but in the performance parts realm, they're going to have things there. And one of the first things I believe they're going to get for you who wants it would be a rear differential gear change. So when you get the Bronco and you do want to put the bigger tires on it and you could do a little off-roading, you're going to want that gear, right? You're going to want that gear to compensate and whatnot. So that's one of the first things they're going to be coming out with, among other things as well. So we had a nice little chat with Ford Performance. There's a few things that I can't shed light on yet, but it's going to be an exciting year for them. They're going to roll out a bunch of new parts, not just for Bronco, by the way, but for hot rod parts and things like that. Now, we have talked about their crate engine, their new push rod. I think they're calling it Godzilla crate engine. That thing is pretty fantastic. And you're going to start to see that. Like, that's been offered as a crate engine. They have a control pack coming out for that soon. And they're going to have, for you builders out there, they're going to have different versions. So if you don't want the entire crate engine, you are going to be able to start to get this thing in pieces, block, heads, short blocks, things like that, and start doing your own work on them. So in the performance parts world, that's kind of a badass engine, sort of a modern-day pushrod engine from Ford that we've already seen starting to make big power. I think there's 400 and something horsepower in its stock OE configuration. We've already seen a big Whipple supercharger go on top of one of those. They've developed a kit for it that they're testing and probably will have a tune for. And thing's a monster. It's going to be a badass engine, starts to make you think.
There's some really cool stuff coming out. And yeah, Bronco has been delayed by 6 months. So we were hoping to get it, you know, early this year, and now it's going to be summer. But we've just had to put the order in. The dealer was asking us to put the order in by the end of this month. And you're right. I mean, the first edition, which is what we've got, has loads of kit on it. It has the big beadlock tires and everything else. But actually, you know, part of the fun of owning it will be playing with, you know, Ford Performance parts in the way that we've added Mopar stuff to our Wrangler. And that's going to be a big issue. You know, it's going to be a big part of Bronco ownership. And if they're they're serious about getting into that kind of Wrangler community type feel, then, you know, it's a big part of living with a vehicle like that, isn't it?
It is. I'd love to see when you guys get into it, you start doing a few modifications. I want to see the videos of that happening, because this Bronco is so modular, fenders, everything come off. But in the reality is how easy is it going to be? I mean, look, if it's a half a day or whatever, it's fine. It's not like you're going to be swapping fenders 3 days a week. But I am curious as just sort of the process for the average Joe, you know, because Ford has been putting a lot of thought into, you don't need complex tools and a lift and all this stuff. You just need some basic tools or whatever or something, and you could start to swap things out. You mentioned Wrangler, and you know, I don't know where we are with the different tops of Wrangler, but some are complex and some are not complex. And some of them are kind of a pain in the ass to remove, so you don't want to do it. Like, how does that compare Wrangler versus Bronco? That'll be interesting to see.
It will, because we actually did a film on how to take the hard top off our Wrangler and put the soft top on, and nobody watched it first. Now it's got tons of views because it's not straightforward. Yeah. And that's where you're right. That's where, like, it's like old cars, isn't it? As you go back in time, it gets more and more difficult. So that will be really interesting. We can't wait. It's going to be, we're probably going to have to trade in our GT500 to buy this thing.
Oh,
sell? Maybe sell, man. Maybe sell. But, yeah, we're like, because it's like, oh, the Bronco delayed 6 months. Like, oh, I'm going to have to keep the GT500 a bit more then. You know,
Small world.
I'm sounding very LA.
Well, I just ordered, finally, I actually put my order in for the Ford Mustang Mach 1.
And I think that's a good choice.
And
stick?
Manual. And I put it out there and said, what options should we get? We might as well just do it now. Well, I'm not going to get into all the options now, but I will tell you this, is there are two options I did not get, and I had some thought behind this. Is one, I did not get the Recaro seats, and two, I did not get the rear seat delete. And the reason why is because the regular seats are fantastic. They're power, they're heated, and they're cooled, right? And my thought was, it's very easy for me to grab a racing seat or a Recaro seat or whatever, and when I want it, to put that in. But it's difficult to go the opposite direction. If I ordered it with the Recaros and you wanted the comfortable seat, good luck finding that. You'd have to order it from the factory and whatever. It's not like an aftermarket thing. But racing seats are all over the aftermarket, right? So if you wanted a lightweight, if you're going to do a track day, super easy to swap in, you know, fairly easy to swap that in. Same thought on rear seat delete. The rear seat delete kit is going to be something that's going to be available in the aftermarket, probably in the Ford Performance Parts catalog. But you know what you're not going to find in that rear, in the Performance Parts catalog? Stock rear seats.
Yeah. Well, right? all you have to do, Matt, is take them out. I don't even know whether it's a package, is it? It's just.
Yeah.
But you're right. Actually, when we bought the GT500, if you went for the full carbon part, the track package, mm-hmm. the reason we didn't was partly because it was 20 grand. And partly because you lose all the rear seats as well. And it's the same. It's always driven me mad that the GT3 911 is the same. It's like, actually, rear seats are useful either for throwing people in for short distances or like throwing kit in and things like that. And I know it's always this thing, oh, you know, you got to turn it into a two-seater. But, you know, our GT500 has got the rear seats, and that's really useful.
Yeah, honestly, like, where's the dog going to sit?
Exactly.
There's always that. I don't know. But again, the thought process was those things are available in the aftermarket, which I can get directly from Ford in their Performance Parts catalog, or pick my own version, especially when it comes to the front seats. So,
are the dogs going to be allowed in this car, Matt?
No. But it was a nice thought for somebody else that wanted to get this one of these cars.
If you want to lose that new smell,
yeah, right. That fresh dog smell you get that in a car. Anyway, we'll get into more options later when I submitted it, and
When did you get it?
Where? When?
When?
When? In the spring. I will tell you this, because of the performance package. So there is a first allocation of cars that the performance package wasn't an option on it. So, you know, we're good friends with our friends at Galpin Autosports and Galpin Ford. And I talked to them and they said, hey, we can get you on the list now, but no performance package. And I said, well, yeah. When the performance package? They said, well, you got to wait a little while to order it, and then it'll come in the spring. But hopefully we'll get one of the first with the performance package. Honestly, this whole thing of like getting the first car or getting the first, you know, early VIN, none of that really matters to me. I just want to get the car and drive the car. Getting something first or getting one of the early models just means I get it sooner. That's the only exciting part for me. I don't care if it's VIN 500 or VIN, you know, 1200. It doesn't make that much of a difference to me. Obviously, talking with Goldberg, when he just got his TRX, by the way. He just got delivery of his TRX.
Yeah, I saw that on Instagram, yeah.
And they did something special for him. They got him VIN 95, which was his NFL football number. And Goldberg, I think on Twitter, on Instagram, is Goldberg 95. That's his number. So they surprised him with that. He didn't even bring it up. He just said, hey, I want a TRX. When you can, you know, let's do it. I want to buy it. And then they hit him up and they said, good news, it's coming soon. We got you VIN 95. And that actually really, really meant a lot to him.
That's so cool. I like that a lot.
He was really surprised, and that was huge for him. But I don't have anything like that. I wasn't a professional football player, which might surprise you.
You'd be agile.
Yeah. I'd just be running for my life every second. Just get away. But anyway, so That'll be kind of exciting. And when I get more information as to, I don't know what they're going to do. Do they hit me up and go, hey, you know, we started the build process, or here's the VIN you are going to get, and here's the timing. As I get more of that information, I'll let you guys know. And I'll get into the specs a little bit later. I submitted it. Ford confirmed it and said, hey, I think you got a nice car here. I don't know if there's like another level of confirmation, you know, from them on saying, you know, it's good to go. I don't want to, because actually with one of the vehicles that Goldberg had ordered previously with Dodge, they came back and they said, hey, the color you wanted, we can't do. The paint was limited, or there's a problem with the manufacturer. We can get you that color if you order like the black hood and trunk lid, right? Because we're limited on how much paint. So then he had to go back and make a decision. So I'm just worried about that. You know, like,
yeah,
like that, hey, I got this appearance package. And they go, yeah, we ran out of paint for the, you know, for this or that, you know, like.
There's so much of this. Well, I just moved house. I need a new garage door. And that's like a 4-month lead time at the moment. You know, it's just such a struggle with supply and factories being shut down. It's tough. It's a really tough world in which to try and build cars or build anything at the moment.
Yeah, it's anything we're doing out here as well. In anything that's built at a factory, there's a caveat to everything. You know, somebody goes, hey, we think we're on schedule to get you this thing in 6 weeks, but our factory got COVID, and if it happens again, it's going to be 4 months, you know, instead of two, you know. It's going to be one of those things. But anyway, Alistair, thanks so much. What do we got looking forward to on Edmunds?
Huge things. We check out our at the moment, we just launched a video of the our long-term experience of living with a Kia Telluride. That's been doing really well for us. Alana Scher is launching a film tomorrow about the Acura MDX. We've got some cool drag races coming up. We've got the Taycan piece that we talked about. So there's there, check out that M5CS. So no end of content. No end of content.
Right on. So guys, go to Edmunds.com or go to Edmunds.com/roadnoise, where you get a lot of this this fun stuff. And you can follow Alistair. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and he's Weaver on Cars on Instagram. And if you want to work for him, slide into his DMs right behind Chris. And you can apply. You can follow
Chris,
me.
You're more than welcome.
you can follow me at Motorator. We're hopefully keep posting images of the shop and the cars we're driving and all kinds of fun stuff. So, guys, thank you. Appreciate it, Alistair. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Chris.
And until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.